The Touchdown City Show is presented by Masters Law Firm, West Virginia's personal injury lawyers, and Parmar Stores. If there's not a Parmar store near you now, there will be one soon. Coming to you from the Stone Church Studio in St. Albans, West Virginia, this is the Touchdown City Show.
Welcome into the Touchdown City Show. This is the podcast edition coming to you from the Stone Church Studio. I'm Anthony Lewis with Michael Sussman and Derek Bailey, and this is the Touchdown City Show. Gentlemen, welcome back. It's good to see you guys.
Good to be here following a win.
Yeah.
3-1.
First three-game win streak under Neil Brown. First time he's beat Texas Tech. Congratulations, Coach.
Yeah, the monkey's off his back. I haven't seen anything like that since Rich Rod couldn't get over the Maryland hump.
It's been a while since we've had that. Well, the Oklahoma hump, but that doesn't count. That's Oklahoma. But it's been a while, yeah, since a team's owned us like that. I mean, 4 years in a row.
And we were manhandled down there last year. That was embarrassing.
I think they got us a couple times like that.
Yeah, we all have a chip on our shoulder against former employers, stuff like that. I think it was a mental block with Neil Brown, but the defense stepped up for him.
West Virginia sitting at 3-1. Who thought we would be 3-1?
I don't think very many people thought they'd be 3-1. I did not.
I thought 2-2. I had this one as an L.
I had this one as an L as well.
Yeah, so... it's good to be 3-1. And I said, you know, what's kind of crazy is, when you look at it from the big picture, they're going to probably get some top 25 votes because what happens is people don't watch and they just vote and they're going to look at it and go, well, West Virginia's only loss is to Penn State.
If you watched that game, you didn't see a top 25 team.
I'm just telling you, you know, people that vote
The people that vote do not watch, you can tell.
Yeah, definitely if you beat TCU, I don't know if you say that yet just because of the quarterback situation, but definitely next week. Maybe if you beat TCU.
You got to rank somebody. That's the thing. You have to rank somebody, and teams keep losing.
I'm not saying they're going to be in it. I bet you somebody votes for
them. There might be somebody that puts them 25th. I wouldn't be surprised because there's people, I mean, especially in the AP, those people do not watch games.
No, not like
they just throw a vote in and go.
We watch more than the voters do.
Oh, we do. Absolutely.
And the coaches' poll is basically worthless.
How do the coaches know how to rank a team? They don't get to watch.
Yeah. So, well, here's one good thing that we almost lost yesterday. How about Sussman's guy, Cole Taylor? He's emerging.
That was really scary on that running back pass where he came down awkwardly on his knee. But, yeah, he's just the security blanket on this team. He run blocks really effectively as well. Probably right now our best offensive player.
That guy actually looks like an NFL prospect. He can run block. He catches the ball. He's very solid. I would like to see him get more involved in the passing game. I love the little RPO that they run with Nico and him where he can just flip it to him because Taylor always seems to get upfield. He gets yardage on that play. I think they need to get him more involved somehow. I mean, even if it's short intermediate routes, just to build some confidence up for Nico. But, yeah, I really like that kid. He's pretty good.
The NFL is proving that the tight end can be a dangerous weapon, and it's about time that college football is taking note and started to implement the tight end again. So I'm glad at least Neil Brown's paying attention.
The big issue in the NFL, though, if you don't block at tight end, you generally won't play. So whoever blocks generally gets on the field, and he blocks pretty well in the run game. Haven't paid much attention on the pass game because he's usually out for passes, but he's pretty solid as a run blocker.
Yesterday marked Nico's first career start. It's the first time as a starter. We've seen him in the past, obviously. And fill in and mop up and those type of duties. But what'd you guys think of his first start?
I got to give him credit because, to your point, in those mop-up situations, he got victories. Overall, he's 3-0 career-wise in games where he's really had an impact. He's got to play better, though. The receivers did not make plays around him, but there were two pretty drastic underthrows and one ball that he led too far to the sideline that was incomplete. Just so many shot plays that Nico should have hit. He had an ill-advised interception, too. Not good enough for my liking. There was a lot of bad offensive football. But I'd give him like a C minus.
Yeah, he was inconsistent. There was good, there was bad, there was ugly, and there was in between. You're probably going to get the in between most of the time, but he overthrew a touchdown on the very first play when Texas Tech scored to make it 20-13 when they kicked the field goal. He overthrew a touchdown. That was the ball towards the sideline, and he underthrew Clement when Clement was 10 yards, 15 yards past the defense. You have to get that football to him. To his credit, though, I thought he ran well. He led the Mountaineers in rushing. He moved the sticks when he needed to. He made some plays. He made some bad plays, bad decisions. And again, like Michael said, the receivers started dropping passes.
Yeah, Nico, 12 of 21, 78 yards passing, one touchdown, two interceptions, rushing the ball, finished the day with 72 yards. To your point, he needs help from the wide receivers. You guys cannot drop footballs. Especially big plays, first downs, touchdowns.
Yep.
That's a problem. Two things. One, I think we see why he's not the starter. But on the positive side, I see the upside in this kid. You got to remember, this is his first start ever. It's a different ballgame from high school.
And I don't want to give Garrett Green credit like he's an established starter. Do we really have an existing guy or something that we can be comfortable with? If I'm West Virginia, I start Nico Marchiol again just because you can't turn away from winning.
I think I would stick with Marchiol because I think the ceiling with Marchiol is much higher than it is with Green. I think the ceiling with Marchiol, there's more room for that offense to grow and develop with Marchiol than there is with Green. And that's not a disrespect to Green or anything. I think you can bring Green in even as a change of pace quarterback, have a package for him, that's fine. But I think we need to stick with Nico as well.
I think the only reason why they won't play him is the experience reason. I mean, if you're going to try to win games, I mean, and that's the only reason why I think he got the nod. I really look at the same kind of kid. I mean, they have different qualities as far as what they possess, what they bring to the game. But I just think it's an experience factor with Green. And I've said it here a million times, it comes down to who coaches trust. And then you throw a pick like you did on that first possession. Oh. I mean, he threw it right to the guy, and that's why he doesn't trust him. He makes those type of mistakes. The second pick wasn't his fault. That was a strike. Hit the kid. Was that Carter he hit right in the hands? Ball popped up in the air.
I can't remember now.
I went to a concert after the game, so I
can't remember.
It's really a trust factor. So we'll see. I think he's gonna play. I think he's gonna start at Texas Tech, or I'm sorry, at TCU. I think Green's injury is probably a little worse than what they're letting on.
It probably is. And, you know, hopefully the kid for Texas Tech's okay, too. That was pretty gruesome.
I think he's done.
I think he injured it on the play before, and then when he went to plan, it just finished, and that was gross.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully that kid's okay, but it did not look good.
I think he had to have surgery. I think he's done for the season.
Oh, yeah.
His career. So that was pretty gruesome. I do want to say it was a pretty clean game from the offense as far as penalties. You know, in the past, we've always had the tendency of not playing well, but then we would get into positions, you know, fourth and one from the one to punch one in for a touchdown, and we would jump off sides, or we would get a hold. Now, we're seeing cleaner games where they're not doing the silly things, except for the Zach Frazier thing where they called him for moving the ball on that fourth and one.
I think what they're talking about is when they go up to the line, and you know how a center will grab the ball and like move it up.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's I'm assuming because he said moving the ball, but I mean like you have to move the ball, like pick the ball up to snap it. I don't understand. I mean I didn't understand.
Yeah, that's one of those things that happens almost every play, and when they call it, it's like out of nowhere. It's like, all right, guy, you can make that call. Congratulations.
Yeah, I mean I did not understand. That's the first time I've ever seen that called. Ever in my life watching, and I've watched football forever.
So it was interesting, though. He said when they threw the flag, they mentioned that it was after a warning. But then Neil Brown in the press conference said he knew nothing about it. He wished that they would have said something to him so he could have talked to Zach. So I was like, well, you're saying there was a warning. He's saying there was no warning or conversation unless they talked directly to Zach Frazier.
Yeah, it sounds ticky-tacky to me. I don't know. That's weird.
It was, I've never heard of it.
C.J. Donaldson, only 15 carries, 48 yards. The number of carries doesn't shock me because we've talked about this with the quarterback situation West Virginia has now in the RPO game. He's going to get less carries. But man, did he look off to you guys yesterday?
Maybe a step behind. They weren't getting into the downhill stuff quickly enough. It wasn't as violent as it was against Pitt.
I think he might be a little bit dinged up from, you know, from the workload so far. I do think he's a little dinged, and I think they're worried about that. That's why he only got 16 touches or 16 carries. But yeah, he looked, I don't know, something, he looked hesitant or something. It didn't look right. But of course, that could be due to what Texas Tech did defensively. He's going to see a lot more, you know, 7, 8, 9 man fronts is what he's going to start seeing. So he's going to have to adjust to that, and the play calling is going to have to adjust to that as well.
Why are we waiting for him to have a breakout game? It's like we're still waiting for that spark. We've not seen that flash just yet that we saw early last year up until his injury at Texas.
Did we overhype him in the offseason? Is that what it is? Did we turn him into Adrian Peterson because of two great games last year?
I don't necessarily think it's that. I think it's the offense is like, it's sluggish. Let's be honest. It's a sluggish offense. It's hard to get a rhythm in the offense. And, you know, you won the game yesterday. It was great and fantastic. But, like, you come out with, what, 4 minutes left, and this is the one Nico overthrow that we already spoke of, but you throw, which makes no sense with 4 minutes left in a game where Texas Tech was struggling to score anyway. You don't give your best player the football. It's like he can't get into a rhythm or something. It's like they'll go to him 3 or 4 times, and then they don't go to him for 5 or 6 plays, and it's just it throws him out of rhythm or something. I don't know. It's just weird.
With a back like Donaldson, do you want to see more under center from the offense? I know that's like Japanese these days, but can you just go under center and give him the football?
I mean, I don't know if that's the right answer or not, but I mean, you know, in my opinion, he's going to be one of those guys that's like the more he gets that football, the better he's going to do. Like he might go for 3 yards first carry, like, you know, he might be averaging 4 yards a carry, but eventually in the second half after that offensive line's leaned on him all game long and he's ran and they've been tackling him, he's going to bust one for 50. And he hasn't got to that point yet because I don't think he's got enough touches in a ball game to do that yet.
And that's on my list here. And you guys already, two things you already hit on. I'm going to come back to the Neil Brown thing with 4 minutes to go. But the offensive identity, man, and it even seems to change. It's changed again with Nico in the game. So, you know, we don't have, again, in year 5 of Neil Brown, an offensive identity. It's like he doesn't know what he wants to do. Oh, we're going to ground and pound. Okay. Well, we came out running quarterback draws and throwing stuff to the corners. And I'm like, come on, man. Just give the ball to Donaldson and let's run the football and establish the run. And then you can start doing all the other passing off of play action and roll Nico and roll him to the right direction. These left-handed quarterbacks.
Yes.
What are we doing?
We've talked about that too. We noticed that during the broadcast. He was rolling him to the wrong side.
I don't know. It just seems like in year 5, we don't have an offensive identity. And, you know, and I'm glad that we're 3-1, but this does not in any circumstance allow Neil Brown to take a break and feel like there's no pressure. Because I'm grading him on the 5 years of work. And the 5 years of work were on full display with 4 minutes to go. I mean, basic football was on display and he failed. 4 minutes to go, all you got to do is run the football.
Force them to use their timeouts.
Make them use their timeouts. And then, because if you're going to be conservative, which he had been
the entire game. Let me say this about that. He was right being conservative. Texas Tech was having trouble scoring. When it was 13-3, it was 13-3. Run it up the middle and punt it back. Make them score. Don't give them any opportunities. And they finally scored, which was fine, but WVU answered, which was great. But again, the conservative play calling is fine, but with 4 and 4.5 minutes to go, you come out there and you just throw it 3 downs. Let's just throw. We'll punt it back to you.
So was that him? Was that his version of, I'm going to be aggressive here and try to close out this game? Because there's nothing aggressive about that, man.
You don't have Caleb Williams. You don't have Shador Sanders. You don't have Penix. You don't have one of the elite quarterbacks. You have a freshman that's thrown for 82 yards in the game. And with everything on the line, you throw it 3 straight times.
And let's be honest, we don't have one of those receivers on any of those teams either.
Well, it played out exactly how I thought it would play out, because they get the ball back and they've got 2 minutes when they should have only had about a minute.
And they had 3 timeouts.
And they had all their timeouts. So those plays at the end of the game would not have existed. those shots at the end zone they were taking, they would have taken them from 30 or 40 yards back.
The play calling, I don't think the play calling did anyone any favors for WVU yesterday. Like, even for Nico. Now, there were a couple nice calls in there. The trick play worked great, fine. It was a good call.
It was still sloppy.
I love the first play of the game where he gave Nico that easy little rollout pass. Like, I like that call. That's a good call to, like, give him a nice little rollout to build a little confidence. But, like, overall, I thought the play calling was just bad.
Yeah.
Good drive when it was 13-10 to go up 20-10. There were some easy passes built into the play calling there. They ran the football as well. That was the best drive of the game.
Yes.
Yeah, but, you know, back to my point, the timeouts, I'm not going to let this go. Because it was like the entire game, you know, because the way the numbers were falling, I was waiting for the other shoe to drop on us. Like, and I said, here they come. I said, if they score, I was with your uncle and some of your family. And I said, they're going to go for two. Oh, they're not going to go.
He would have gone for two.
I was like, they're going for two.
That coach has onions, as Bill Raftery would say. He goes for fourth downs, two-point conversions. He goes for it, and he would have gone for two in the win, especially with a backup quarterback.
Yeah, at that point, you had nothing to lose. Yep. So thank God they didn't score, because
I thought for a while it was going to be 21.
Bro, I would have been furious.
I would have been furious.
Especially, and then back to the timeouts. You know, you've not burned the clock. I don't know.
Yeah, terrible play calling. It's so disjointed right now. It's a bad product at Milan Puskar Stadium. I don't blame the fans that left at halftime. And you can blame the rain, the drizzle in 55 degrees if you want to, and say that's why the fans left. I was there. That was a snooze fest. And it starts with the offense just not making plays. You need a couple climactic moments in a football game that get you out of your seat, big plays down the field, things that Mountaineer fans were accustomed to experiencing for a while. And now it's just some of the worst football you've ever sat through. I'm glad they're going on the road. I'm tired of it.
But, you're tired of having to go up there. Tired of
it. But see, from where I sit and watch games all day long, the ugly football games, they're everywhere. It's not just that WVU, but at the thing,
it's the entitlement. It's the NIL. It's the transfer portal. This is the early returns of college football deteriorating.
The commercials are completely out of control. They're completely out of control. I sat down. I know you guys.
TV broadcast?
Yes. I watched Michigan and Rutgers yesterday. Now, this is the honest truth. I don't know. I follow Michigan. You know, Michigan likes to run the ball. In the first possession of the second half, they got the ball at the 10-yard line. They were at their own 40-yard line off the kickoff. How much time do you think was left in the third quarter? They had moved it 30 yards.
I mean,
there was 10 minutes of gameplay left in the third quarter. 5 minutes of drive time from their own 10 to the 40-yard line. They moved it down and got a field goal and ran 8 minutes off the clock. It is bad for college football. I don't care what anyone says. You can't mount a comeback anymore. It's going to be impossible to mount, because if you get the ball and you just run for one first down and the clock doesn't stop, you're taking 2, 3, 4 minutes. That's why I say West Virginia needs to bleed the clock and try to win that way. It might be ugly, but it's effective. And that's bad, in my opinion. It's bad for college football because the fans are sitting through more TV timeouts. People were sitting through commercials. It's just not good. It's not a good product right now. And I don't care that West Virginia wins ugly, but I agree with Michael. It's boring football.
Nationwide. To what extent do you think that is a byproduct of kids running things and transferring wherever they want? Because you used to have to know what you were doing to touch the field. You were a 2-3 year guy in most cases before you were ever even able to play.
Yeah, well, I think that's a big part of it. I do, because,
well, let's localize it for West Virginia. For instance, the plays to Gallagher seem forced.
Yeah,
those seem like forced plays to me, just to keep him
happy.
And
no yak yards on our team whatsoever.
Yeah, so no. You know, and I think he's going to be a great player, but you don't listen. He doesn't, if he's not earning it in practice, just because he may peel out next year is not a reason to run silly plays.
I'm in the corner of, I don't care. If you hand Donaldson the ball on first down and he gets 15 yards, and you hand Donaldson the ball on the next first down and he gets 15 yards, you've run Donaldson until they stop it. I don't care if anyone on the whole team touches the ball. It's a team game. You're gonna, if you win, great. If you lose, you win as a team, you lose as a team. I don't care if he's the only person on offense to touch the ball if West Virginia wins the ball game. I don't care. I wouldn't run plays. I'm like you. I thought the end around to Gallagher was kind of a forced. Just a forced. I mean, just to get him a touch or something. Like, I don't care who touches the ball. I want to see wins. Mm-hmm. And again, that goes back to what I'm saying though for the overall product of college football. I sat down to watch Oregon yesterday. I don't know if anybody watched Oregon and Colorado. I did. It's 42-0. Now, everybody's talked about how great Colorado's been, and don't get me wrong, that's a great success story from the portal. They're good. That's a good story. They've went from one win, basically. They're already at three. They were horrible last year. Somebody tweeted, and they hit the nail on the head. They were like, this is what happens when you play a team that doesn't lose transfers because the guys that couldn't play don't play, and you get transfers from schools where the guys couldn't play. Mm-hmm. And this is exactly what's wrong. He has a team full of transfer portal guys, but they couldn't start at their own schools, so they went to Colorado in a hope to get to start, and they did. But when they ran into somebody that's good, you saw what happened.
Later, or actually on the radio broadcast, I'm teasing. This is called a tease for the broadcast people. We're going to talk to Mike Logan this week, talking about the 93 team. So that'll be on the radio broadcast. So for those of you listening to the podcast, go over to our social media outlets, and I'll actually repost all of our affiliates and then check the times because they run on different dates. And I'm in the process of trying to get a website built and dragging our feet there.
Speaking of Logan, let's talk a little bit about that defense yesterday.
Yeah.
I thought the defense played extremely well. I know they had a backup quarterback in there or whatever, but the thing is even when the starter was in, the defense was holding up. Burks was outstanding. I thought he was the player of the game overall. He was all over the field, and the defensive line was very disruptive. That defensive line is solid. The front seven is pretty good.
Burks, 7 tackles, 1 tackle for a loss, 2 pass breakups, and a key one at the end.
He played extremely well. I thought he was the player of the game yesterday.
Lavin and Koba, too, they fly around.
It's a good front seven. The thing is, in the secondary, if they can come on, and keep performing at the level they have the last 2 weeks, you might find something on defense and be pretty solid on there. And we've given him a lot of crap, but the defensive coordinator deserves some credit there. They've, 13 points and 6 points the last 2 games. That's, that's what you want.
The artist formerly known as Dumpster Juice.
Yeah, you mentioned Trey Lathan. He had 8 tackles, 1 solo, 1 pass breakup. The West Virginia defense keeping him in the ball games. They've had 7 different players with sacks, so they're getting pressure. The last play of the game, pressure, made a bad pass. So they've made some defensive changes. So after Penn State, they made some changes. They didn't incorporate him into the Duquesne game because they didn't want to show it on film to Pitt. But they've changed some coverage issues that they were having, and it looks like it's starting to pay off a little bit.
The concern for the defense still, to me, is the same concern. There were some guys open over the middle of the field again, and, they were playing with a freshman backup quarterback, and he didn't get to exploit that. And West Virginia allowed 4 of 4 on fourth down in the fourth quarter, I believe. You can't allow fourth down conversions at that rate. That's obviously no success rate whatsoever. But, again, it's been a malign group, and for them to hold Texas Tech to 13, Pitt to 6 in back-to-back weeks, it's massive improvement, and it's great to see.
Here's a stat you don't see a lot. Texas Tech, 15 of 43 in the pass game, 28 incompletions.
Yeah, it's a...
That's why it was a snooze fest.
That's why it was a snooze fest.
So West Virginia's playing vanilla offense, and then they can't complete a pass.
Yep.
It was tough to watch. Don't forget, on the radio broadcast that will later be posted for all those of you that like to win prizes, make sure you listen for the Alumni Hall Trivia Question of the Week. We didn't have anyone try to even win that thing last week.
Come on. You're just leaving some good gear on the table.
That's all right. We'll use that for... Yeah. We'll go shopping. So for those of you, listen for the radio posting and then listen for that trivia question, and it'll be on the radio broadcast. So when you see the show post, it's already aired a couple of places, but text it in anyway. You might get lucky. And
if nobody's texting, text. I mean, you might be the only person. And if you get it wrong, we'll give you a second guess.
Yeah, there you go. You sure that's what you wanted to answer? Let's get into some headlines here. So... The 1993 team was back in Morgantown yesterday. How was that reception? I hate that they never cover that on television.
Yeah, I looked to the left. There was an ESPN screen, and I was kind of waiting for it because when Major Harris was honored, they did a little thing. They did not do it for the 1993 team. That should have gotten some screen time, but it was received well. Everybody cheered. Good reception, of course, for Don Nealon. And then Bruce Irvin later on. That was cool.
I loved how Bruce talked about the state of West Virginia in his interview on that broadcast. Kudos to Bruce Irvin. That's a mountaineer right there. Good for that guy. I appreciated that.
Yeah, you know that guy. You know, the story's been documented. You know, he was basically like a millisecond away from going to prison for a long, long time. Some of his friends ended up getting caught up in some activity, and I think that scared him to the point, scared him straight, took his butt to school, went to junior college, and then ended up at West Virginia. You know, 10-year NFL career, won a Super Bowl. You know, what a success story. I mean, the street life, I've never seen anyone survive that. I've got friends that went to prison when they were 18 years old for 5, 6, 7 years. If you don't think that's a long time, go look at some pictures on your Facebook time hop from 7 years ago and tell me if you want to be sitting in a little room for that long. But, you know, that was awesome. The 93 team. How'd Coach Nealon look? I know, you know, Coach is no spring chicken, but he still looks really good.
He was pretty much standing still, just kind of taking it in. Didn't move around a whole lot. He looked good, though.
He's about 90, isn't he?
He's in his 80s, somewhere in his 80s.
His birthday's New Year's Day, I know that.
And but, yeah, it's hard to believe, man. It's been 30 years since that all went down. And if you remember, you won't remember this, Michael. You weren't even thought about at this point. but if you remember, Derek, the controversy at the time was who should play for the National. This is back before the playoff and the BCS, and it was the AP and the coaches. And
they had a, quote, game of the century in South Bend earlier that year, and Notre Dame defeated Florida State 31-24 in that game. And instead of putting West Virginia against
Nebraska,
they allowed Florida State to go. Notre Dame was also sitting there because Boston College upset Notre Dame later in that same day. West Virginia beat Miami. Boston College upset Notre Dame 41-39 on a last second field goal. And then West Virginia went to BC the following weekend, the day after Thanksgiving, and won on the Ed Hill touchdown. And they allowed Florida State to play Nebraska for the national championship, and West Virginia ended up in the Sugar Bowl against Florida.
But West Virginia had to beat Florida, and they would have given them
they'd have probably got a share.
The share. Remember the old share of the national championship?
Well, he probably doesn't even remember the tie. You used to be able to play to a tie. Did you know that?
I know that it used to just kind of be up for grabs, like they'd figure it out later.
Yeah. Did you know they could play for a tie?
No.
You didn't know? Like, back in the day.
In 91, West Virginia finished 5-4-2.
Yeah, tied Miami of Ohio, and I can't remember who the other team was they tied.
I don't even remember either.
But yeah, you used to be played, like, if the game was 21-21, it wasn't overtime, it was just you're a tie, and you're going to the next week.
No OT at all.
No OT at all. No way to break the tie or anything.
That's terrible.
OT didn't start until about 1996.
Yeah.
It was 95, 96, somewhere in that range.
It's been around.
And it might even have been even later than that, but I thought it was around that. Because remember Georgia and Auburn, they were the first overtime game that I can really remember. And they played a 56-49 game, and it went like six overtimes.
Yeah. But I just remember at the end of the season, Coach Nealon did the media tour, you know, politicking for West Virginia to be playing. Yeah. I'm no rocket scientist, but it doesn't take a real genius to figure out the two undefeated teams should be playing. I mean, he tried.
He used we beat the team that beat the team.
He did the whole deal, and they even passed on the Cotton Bowl, thinking, well, if we go to the Sugar,
yeah, we can get a shot.
We can get a shot at the
national title.
But then they got blown out by Florida. That was a bad mismatch.
They did go up 7-0, though.
Yeah. They just didn't. That was Eric Rett and those guys. That was a bad matchup.
Florida team had tons of talent. Yeah. That's tons of
talent. They went on, what, 2 years later? 3 years later?
They won it in 96.
Yeah.
They won it in 96. But Nebraska ended up winning the following 2 years in 94 and 95.
Yeah.
And then Florida State, obviously, from like 88 to 2000, finished in the top five every year and beat the crap out of everybody.
So did you guys see the post that I made on our social media? Did I tell you guys about Major Harris's ring?
I saw something about him getting his Fiesta Bowl ring back, but I didn't really read it close. Said somebody had it in a pawn shop and got a hold of him, which is great.
So
that he got it back.
So he called me Monday, and he was staying down the street because of that. We were in that chicken wing eating contest, which we'll get into later. But he calls me. He said, "Hey, I'm going to stop by." I said, "Come on." So he shows me, pulls out. He goes, "Hey, somebody at this pawn shop had it was one of the ones here in St. Albans, actually, had my Fiesta Bowl ring. Now, I didn't get into, did you sell it? He didn't pawn it to the pawn shop. He could, I don't know. I don't know how he, I don't know if he lost it, if he sold it 30 years ago. That's his business, whatever. So you can imagine that this thing has changed hands to collectors, and somebody pawned the damn thing. So the owners reached out to somebody that knew him. They were nice enough, and they gave it back to him.
That's awesome. That's why this is a great state.
Yeah. So, you know, pawnbrokers, usually they're kind of like ball busters and, you know, hey, you're going to have to at least pay us. But they gave the man his ring back.
But which, he's in that upper echelon of West Virginia royalty. He should never have to pay for a beer. He should never lose his ring. That was the right thing to do. Shout out to that pawn shop owner.
People 40 and over think Major's the greatest player of in West Virginia history. People probably under 40 think it's Pat White. So, I mean, it's a close call there. But, I mean, Major's West Virginia royalty.
I always laugh, and I put it in biblical terms, before Pat White and after Pat White. Everything before Pat White, you know, is – you know, it's crazy to think, because people will tell you that Rich Rod's teams were no good until Pat White came along. Meanwhile, they'd won two Big East championships.
It is what it is.
It's just that thing. It's very biblical, you know, the BC thing. So
I never saw Major play. Who do you guys think's better?
Well, I mean, they're really not the same player.
Okay,
I'm going to say this about it. My personal opinion, both of them were great, and Anthony's right in different ways. I would take Major, because if you drop Major into today's college football in one of these offenses, you would see probably 3,000 passing, 1,000 rushing, and it would look like Caleb Williams. That's what he would
pretty
look
much
like.
Put those numbers up, man, in Don Nealon's offense.
You can go back in 1988, and he made a throw against Penn State, and you know the throw I'm referring
Calvin
to.
Phillips.
Yes, he threw it from like his own 40, a freaking seed. And Phillips is running, and he puts his hands like this, and it hits him right in the hands.
Right,
I mean, you couldn't have thrown the ball any better. And the thing, he was mobile. He was he was 10 years before his time, because Vic came in about 98, 99.
Mm-hmm.
If you'd have dropped him in today's college football, or back when this started, like these spread offenses started coming in, it would have been unbelievable.
Yeah. He was basically playing football out of the eye.
Yeah, he was I formation guy, and he was
pro
so good.
Sets, like old school pro sets,
and don't
not
get me wrong.
Not Mahomes pro sets.
Don't get me wrong either. Reggie Rembert was a really good target.
Yeah, that's not a bad target. Yeah. He's 6'6", 4'4", 40.
There was some good talent around Major, but I still think I would give him the slightest nod over Pat, because I think he was a little bit better
passer
than Pat was.
Pat was a winner, though, man. He'd will you to a victory.
But I will take either one.
Yeah. So I thought that was really cool. And I actually put it on my hand and took a picture with it and stuff. But there's a picture on our Facebook page if you guys want to go over and take that look. Mage reunited with his ring. Couple of quick scores over the weekend. West Virginia knocked off Virginia Tech. Well, I'm sorry. Marshall knocked off Virginia Tech. I'm to the point where Virginia Tech's probably hating playing teams from West Virginia.
Grass is always greener on the other side. Grant Wells, great kid, just a kind of a weird circular career. He starts at Marshall, plays well, plays poorly down the stretch of that weird Doc Holliday saga, transfers what you think would be up to Marshall or to Virginia Tech, and then that program just absolutely falls off a cliff. You go to the Joan as an underdog?
I'll tell you what. I watched this ball game as well. And for you all that don't know, I watch a lot of these games because I have multiple TV sets in my living room. So I'm sitting there and I'm watching this game unfold. And, you know, Virginia Tech, you can say I'm a Marshall hater. You can say whatever you want. I don't care who wins this game, because I do not like Virginia Tech, and I'm actually happy that Marshall won. But there were about four or five calls in this ball game that went against Virginia Tech, and I couldn't believe what I saw. There was a pass interference that was called on a 3rd and 6. The Marshall guy actually pushed the Virginia Tech defensive back down on 3rd and 6, got a first down out of it. They ran a touchdown short. Well, they had a long run and scored a touchdown off of it shortly later. And then there was a roughing the passer called on a slide that was, even the announcer said, that's an egregious call. So there was a couple bad calls that benefited Marshall, but how far has Virginia Tech fallen?
Far when you're losing to a Sun Belt team.
Yeah.
You know, just a few years ago, they would have walked into Huntington and rolled them.
Mm-hmm.
Beamer ball no more.
Yes. No.
No, it's not. It's a long cry. They're one of the, I don't there's so Good many
boy.
There's so many bad Power 5 football teams right now. Bad football. Virginia's bad. Virginia Tech's
bad. Did you watch the end of the Virginia game?
I saw the highlight. I fell asleep and missed the end of it, but I saw the highlight. How bad is Virginia? They are bad, bad.
If a coach was ever going to choke a player, that would have been the night to do
it. Oh, no doubt.
I mean, a personal foul gives them a first down. Then they have to kick it on the – then the quarterback got a first down or a personal foul, so they move the kickoff up or back.
Virginia's 0-4. Virginia Tech's 1-3. There's bad teams in the Pac-12. Stanford lost to Sacramento State. Northwestern's bad, but they beat Minnesota last night. There is just bad football everywhere right now.
So and it's West Virginia is the best Virginia because they've got 2-3-1 teams or 3-1 and 4-0.
Don't watch football in the Virginias.
Yes.
Interesting score yesterday. Iowa State over. Oklahoma State, Rocco Becht went bananas yesterday. I know we always like to talk about Anthony's son. 27-38, 348 yards, 3 touchdowns. We could probably use him in Morgantown.
At least a version of that offense. Come on, give us something. Give us something other than boredom. But no, I didn't catch all of this one. I saw the end. Oklahoma State had a chance to tie at the end of the game, but they didn't really move the football at all. That's another one of those weird games. You guys get the feeling Mike Gundy may call it a career at Oklahoma State after this year. I think he might be done down there.
I think he seems defeated.
Yeah, he's been there for 17, 18. He's like the second longest tenured coach at the school, current school right now. Ferentz is the most, but there's only a couple guys that have been, you know, in places for so long. And he's been there since Les Miles left, if that tells you how long he's been there. And I just can't see him sticking around another year after this one.
My boys, Jacksonville State, as you can see, I'm rocking the T-shirt today over Eastern Michigan, 21-0. Rich Rod is 3-1.
And they're going to start getting some games on national television. All their games are in the middle of the week now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm supporting the Jacksonville State shirt today. And I'm sure some people get pissed off at that, but I don't care. I'm sent my boy Jason Bosley. His boy's playing tackle for Coach Trickett there, and he's a good kid. So I want to get into this. Avon, if you want to jump in on this. Avon's just joined us. Colorado was blown out by Oregon. And that's fine. We knew that was going to happen, I think, for people that watch. And this is the thing that drives me nuts. At one point, I think it was a tease before the game, ESPN called Colorado the new version of the Beatles. And I was like, get out of here with this bullshit.
The 17th ranked team in the country.
The new Beatles. I'm like, come on.
The reason why they probably said that was because the crowd that it draws, not necessarily the type of music or in this situation.
I'm not talking about the type music.
Of football. I mean, they had everybody at the last game. Lil Wayne brought them out. I mean, it was more of a rock star vibe. I mean, not obviously in Oregon. They got donkey stomped.
Are they still the Beatles or are they the Monkees now?
They might be Hanson now. No,
what was the other group? There was another little offshoot. The Monkees were like the caricature the caricature version of the Beatles. Listen, I think the hype. Dion's brought a lot of great things to Colorado, but listen, do not reference them as like the biggest thing going because they got curb stomped on television yesterday.
And it's coming again this weekend. USC's going to throttle them. Guys, it's a great story that they've won 3 games. But the reality is they're not that great. I mean, they've beat a bad Nebraska team. They've beat a bad Colorado State team. And they beat probably a little bit of an overrated TCU team. They have multiple issues in their – they can't run the ball.
At all.
Sanders has no protection. He got sacked, it felt like, 50 times yesterday. I mean, I know I saw at least 5. I mean, they have a lot of issues. And it's not – The hype that he was getting was, it's fine, but it was, you knew that they weren't as good as, if you watched the games, you knew they weren't as good as everyone was saying. Again, he deserves a ton of credit for where they are, but they're not even close to being there. They're a maybe a 5-6 win team still.
They're going to struggle to make a bowl.
They play USC. They play Washington State. They play Oregon State. They play Utah. That's four more games. I don't know if they play Washington or not. They play UCLA, too. That's four or five games on that schedule that they're probably not going to win, and that's okay. But the hype that they were getting was just too much.
Hypothetically speaking, if Deion Sanders would have gone to WVU, it actually would have been a perfect fit because it's a ready-built offensive line.
Yep.
And Deion Sanders is bringing in elite skill.
Yep.
Yeah, that right. would have been perfect for him. That yep. would have been.
That's a whole nother podcast because, and we'll get into it later. But let's just say that I had a secret. Michael and I had a secret lunch rendezvous this weekend, and there was some with someone, and I don't think Gordon Gee would have allowed yep. the rock star vibe to anybody that's going to outshine Gordon.
So I don't know if you guys saw the podcast with Deion and Pat McAfee, because he asked him. He said, "Won't you come? You know, why wouldn't you go to West Virginia?" And he said, "They wouldn't accept me the way I am." Mm-hmm. So he was like, "It wasn't an option." So I'm pretty sure we offered, but because of the stipulations that it came with, he mm-hmm. was like, you know, it just wasn't,
yeah, you wasn't were, the right fit. You were getting all of Deion or none of Deion.
Right.
But
right.
that's what you want, though.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, I don't want Deion to come up here and not be Deion Sanders. Yeah, I mean, that's just stupid.
Well,
like,
you want, West Virginia does, though.
Well, but I mean, like,
I want Leon.
You want Leon Sanders?
Yeah.
Do you remember
those commercials?
So your three fumbles didn't cost you the game? It didn't cost your team the game? No, not if my teammates would have jumped on it. Again, Leon can't do everything.
Those were good. But, yeah, so I don't know. Listen, and he makes a great point, and I love the quote. You better get me while you can.
And that's fine. Yeah, like, you know, they're not there yet, and that's okay. But, like, you know, I think some people that are like that were rooting against Colorado weren't really rooting against Colorado or Deion Sanders. They were just rooting against people to just like, hey, pump the brakes a little bit.
Yeah.
That's what people were rooting for.
Well, yeah. That's rooting against them regardless of how.
But no, I think people want Colorado to be successful. I really do. I'm one of those people. I like when the old programs come back, and Colorado used to be phenomenal. Even I was tired of hearing about the hype. Because
why?
I just because it was just too much. I knew they weren't as good as everybody was making them out to be. I've watched them, like I watched the game, and it's not
too.
A knock against Deion, and I'm not necessarily rooting against it. It's just like I think they needed to pump the brakes. What they're doing
is anybody going to ever tell them that they're not great?
Here's my issue.
Has anyone brought that up to them yet?
What they did is they set, in my opinion, they set Sanders up for failure in a way. Because everyone knew that they weren't that good that's actually sat down and watched right. these games, and they kept hyping them. And now they get blown out. Well, now everybody's going to run on board. Oh, look how crappy he's doing mm-hmm. this and that. That's not fair because he's still doing a fantastic job.
And they're mocking him.
And,
the guys had the Rolexes over on the...
It's, you know, and that's all it's led to. And he's going to be... I think he's going to be fine in the long run, but they're just not there yet.
And I mean, everybody knows. Everybody knows... Yeah. He doesn't have the front. If he get a front where they can protect, I mean, Shador as good as the skill positions were, they were not getting open yesterday.
No, and that's
well, what you're going to run into that.
Yeah, they're going to run into that a couple more times this year too. And I mean, that's fine.
And a lot of that was their skill positions. They're like freshmen.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're not young. Like they're really really young. Like they're. But at the same time, I agree with everything you're saying. They're not as good as
right.
However, I do want them. You know, I mean, again, once you start buying into it, it's hard to even if you're not good. I mean, we didn't have the best team in 2002, but we believed that we were on the way. And obviously, the things just kept snowballing. We get a Pat White, and boom.
I didn't see it, but they kept talking about how, like, disrespect offseason. I didn't see this, but I read on Twitter. Apparently, they went out there before the game and, like, stomped on Oregon's O and did all that kind of stuff, which, okay, you know, you're going to preach disrespect, which
bad
is fine.
Idea.
But then you do that, and then that's just basically what you're saying don't do to us, so don't go out there and do it and then, you know, lose 42-6. It's a bad look. I remember when Michigan jumped on Duke's D and got beat by 50. That's embarrassing.
Yeah, that's I didn't see that.
You got to remember, Deion's a Florida guy. He's a Florida State guy.
I'll tell you
what. He's actually not a Florida State guy.
He's not a graduate, but he's a Florida State guy.
Yeah.
Deion, it's fine for Deion to be Deion because Deion has proven it. The problem is his team, everybody on that team, even the 125th player, thinks they're Deion. Well, dude, you ain't Deion.
You're Leon.
Yeah, according to him, they have like 5 Heisman candidates.
Not now.
Great story. It's just a little, I mean.
It was overblown.
You know. But then again, here we've spent 10 minutes talking about
it. Exactly. I'm still a Deion. I'm still on the. No, I'm still on. It's fine to be. I'm still on that bandwagon.
And it's fine to be on the Deion bandwagon. I'm completely content with people that keep telling me he's going to do. Yeah, I'm not saying he's not going to do a good job. I'm just like, they're not there yet, guys. You need to pump the brakes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Especially on the ESPN front.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into it. West Virginia at TCU this weekend on the road for their first conference game. Man, I tell you what, I don't even like doing this part of the show anymore because who the hell knows what this conference is terrible.
Well, I could tell you one thing, that we're not going to finish last in the conference.
Oh, there's bad football going on right now. Yeah. I'm talking bad football in this conference. Yeah, well, it's not just this one, but bad football overall.
Yeah, but this conference is, I don't know, because I probably pay a little bit more attention to the Big 12. You know, Houston's a dumpster fire. Oklahoma State's a dumpster fire. Central Florida's not what everyone thought they were. I mentioned Oklahoma
Cincinnati
State.
Cincinnati
is not very good. You know, but listen, historically Cincinnati's been good, but the jump, West Virginia was historically good, but the jump to the Big 12 is a big jump from Group of Five.
4 newcomers came to the Big 12. Their Big 12 debut, all 4 lost.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. So West Virginia heading down to Fort Worth on Saturday. Primetime game, 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
Hopefully, I'm going to take a nap. What do you think, Michael? What's West Virginia's chances of pulling one off on the road?
You got to get the pass game going because the opportunities are going to be there. Shedeur Sanders torched TCU. They're susceptible on the back end, as is West Virginia, but there's no Max Dugan. There's no Johnston. I like West Virginia in this game. I think TCU is really, really down this year. But you got to hit the shot plays when they're there. I think Nico Marchiol starts. Like, who are we to turn away from winning, even if it's ugly? I think they go with Marchiol. I think he plays a little bit better, finishes in like the 200-yard range. Give me WVU 31-21.
Wait a minute. Hold on. You realize West Virginia's not scored more
31
than
31 points?
I think TCU's bad.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure you understood how many points we've scored this year.
I've seen TCU once. I've looked at their scores and everything. I know absolutely nothing about them except for Colorado did torch them. However, having said that, Neil Brown can't win on the road. He rarely ever wins road games. Now, TCU is a place that WVU has gone and had success. This is a winnable game. I think it's obviously a complete toss-up. I have no idea what to expect anymore out of these games because teams are so – they're Jekyll and Hyde. Somebody can look great one week and just like the worst team in the country the next. I mean, I think it's going to be a complete toss-up. I'm going to take TCU just because West Virginia is on the road, but I think it's going to be extremely close, and I think it's going to be like 27-24. I mean, it's going to be extremely close. It's a complete toss-up. It can go – I mean, I have no clue who will win. That's why I hate to pick this game.
Well, I'm gonna go with WVU because they're finding a way. That's the one thing that I've been pleasantly surprised about Neil Brown and these teams. Like, I mean, obviously they should have lost the game yesterday. Well, not lost, but we should have been in overtime yesterday. However, we found a way. So I don't think it's going to be a very high scoring game at all. I think we're going to be 17-14 WVU. I mean, if we get to 31, I know we're going to win for sure. But I don't know how we're going to get to 31.
Special teams, big return.
We haven't had a return past 20 yards yet.
We sure aren't going to catch the ball.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I say WVU 31. So 17-14. And again, it's a complete toss-up. Just like you said, Derek, I don't know what's going
to
happen.
Yeah, I mean, you know, West Virginia has an opportunity to be kind of the story of the league, believe it or not. Pick to be last, could go on the road and win. and end up being 4-1 on the season, starting to knock on the door possibly of the top 25, although are they a top 25 team? I don't know. But, you know, what the conversation we had before you got here was the voters don't watch all the games, so they're just going to look at records. Hmm. Oh, well, they're 4-1, and they've beat TCU, and they beat Texas Tech, and I'm going to vote them in. So, again, complete toss-up game. I'm going to try to get back. I'm playing a strategy here. I'm going to take TCU because you guys are leading the way in the – We lost. Derek and I lost last week because we picked Texas Tech.
So but, I'm 3-1 tied with you.
So we're going. I'm going to take TCU and roll the dice here to try to get tied for the first place. And man,
with who though? Tied for first place.
You
with
two
who?
Are in first place.
No,
I picked Texas Tech.
No, oh, you took Texas.
Yeah, I'm taking. We're all tied right
now. Oh, you're first.
We're first. We're all three and one. Oh, okay. We're all three and one.
I need to get my board. I used to have numbers. Right,
tied
here.
With. I won last year.
Well, this is where we take the lead, Derek. I'm taking Texas Tech in a coin flip, low scoring. That's 24-17. Like if they get to 24, they'll win. Like it's they just keep it in the mud.
What was
their defense is playing very well. That's one thing that we've seen.
How many times though? How many times now has Neil Brown's coach teams at WVU scored 30 points? Remember that was the magic number there for a while. If they got the 30, they won. But it was only like 10 times.
Yeah, we haven't seen it in a while. All right, for those of you listening, thanks so much for listening to the Touchdown City podcast. Look for the radio version also. Look for the complete interview with Mike Logan this week. Yeah, I'll talk to Mike Logan. So he'll be on the show, so make sure you look for the complete interview there. We'll also be posting press conferences and all that fun stuff. You can find all that at touchdowncity.com, where you can also get merchandise. We got some new Touchdown City shirts, and you can also shop at Alumni Hall through that site. So for those of you listening, thank you guys so much. We'll see you next week.
Visit our new website at touchdowncity.com. The Touchdown City Show is produced by Anthony Lewis in partnership with HD Media, the Charleston Gazette-Mail.